Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Some of the more unique television services reaching you by smart television sets, device, or circulated bundles, Paragliding TV, Duck Hunting TV, and Big C TV, to name three, originate from one source, StreamFire. Chief Executive Officer Nicholas Strickler joins me next, live from Vienna. It's day two of Peacock presenting ThrillCom scripted series based on a true story. Learn more from Executive Producer and Director Alex Buono later this hour. Stellar TV, also known as the Stellar Network, one of the new breed of networks operating by and for African Americans, moved into second gear last weekend through presenting the annual Black Music Honors. Our second hour begins with Executive Vice President Jennifer Jackson. And today's closing topic is Jagged Mind, a brew of relationship and mind games. This made-for-TV movie debuts June 15th on Hulu, following a showcase at the American Black Film Festival in Miami Beach. Producer Jenna Cavall and director Kelly Kali are on deck. Also ahead, smart TV maker TCL's new big deal, the Tony Awards show goes on, our classic trivia question, and in celebration of Beth. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Zencaster, Apple and Google Podcasts, iTunes, and many more great podcast destinations. It's just in. Tomorrow will be televised. Thank you for joining us on this Friday afternoon. The air quality is a far better deal here in the New York metro area than it was over the last 48 or 72 hours. 69 degrees at the top of the hour here in NYC. If you're still dealing with the air quality craziness going on in places like Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., and parts south, please take it easy. If you can stay home, stay home. Listen to us, as well as those Blog Talk Radio program. We'll keep you company in great way. And if you do have to go out, wear the mask, take extra time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Glad to have you with us. We have a big two-hour show in store for you, and we invite you to be part of the program right off the get-go. How? You pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is open and ready to take you. It's Simon Apple Zero by name, and you can find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, and other people will be live with you. Our big guest parade begins in a few moments, live from Vienna, with StreamFire Chief Executive Nicholas Strickler. He will join us after these news notes. Smart TV set provider TCL has reached a far-reaching alliance with Cineverse, the TV content producer and distributor formerly known as Cinedigm. Under the deal, Cineverse's catalog of ad-supported linear and on-demand channels will play on TCL sets. What's more, Cineverse will organize a lineup of TCL-distributed content and services, plus sell advertising time inside and before after that programming. Cineverse's mega content service of the same name will also become a top TCL attraction. The show must go on, and in the case of Sunday night's Tony Awards, simulcast on CBS and Paramount Plus live from New York at the United Palace, they will. Thanks to a meeting of minds with striking members of the Writers Guild of America East, the Tony telecast will happen without a script and without an open press rehearsal Sunday. Tony nominees who are Guild members are encouraged not to attend, and if any of them win, they can have a non-Guild person accept the award live or pre-record an acceptance speech to run on the air. The Act One pre-show will also go on over Pluto TV, that's the multi-channel bundle owned by Paramount, hosted by Julianne Hough and Skylar Astin. Her Ariana DeBose will return as the main Tony host, and she will perform in the opening number, and that will pretty much be it in terms of performance. Once again, the Tony Awards are Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on CBS, simulcast on Paramount+. Plus. The Act One pre-show starts at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, 3:30 Pacific, on Pluto TV. Elsewhere in New York City, it looks like the writer's strike will not interfere with activity at the Tribeca Festival. The TV series presentation agenda begins tonight with an advanced look at Outlander's next-to-last season on Starz. On-off-camera talent are set to run a red carpet, watch the season opener, and participate in the panel session when the episode wraps. Other TV attractions on display this week at the festival include a new HBO miniseries Full Circle, directed by Steven Soderbergh, an upcoming Tubi original movie Cinnamon, featuring Damon Wayans and Pam Grier. Now, before we get to our first guest, we've got some quickies for you. Long-awaited freeform animated comedy Praise Petey will debut July 21st. New Food Network Italy-based competition series Chow House stays put for a second season. Lionsgate suspended Black Mafia Family, or BMF, producer Ian Wolf after investigating an incident he had with a Writers Guild picket line near the Star series Atlanta set. HBO's Oscar de la Hoya bio-documentary The Golden Boys will premiere over two consecutive nights, July 24th and 25th. And Blown Away returns to Netflix this fall for season four. Extreme Heat is the new subtitle, with former E! Personality Hunter March the new host. And that is News Notes for today. And now joining us live from Vienna in an internet radio exclusive, the Chief Executive Officer of Streamfire, Nicholas Trenkler. Nicholas, welcome back. Good to have you.
Hello, Simon. Thank you for the invitation. Before we start, I just want to mention real quick, over here in Europe, we are seeing the pictures of New York and the Eastern Coast. So everybody from the area that is listening, be safe. We are thinking about you.
Thank you so much, Nicholas, for saying that. And just let everybody know, here in New York, the air quality alert that we've had for the last few days, both on a citywide and statewide level, will be lifted at midnight. It was supposed to be last night at 11 p.m. local time, but it was extended to midnight tonight. Already the clouds and the sky is opening up brightly and beautifully, and we're looking forward to a great weekend. And hopefully by the end of the weekend, in all the places that have been impacted by this air quality situation, they will be done with it as well. So, Nicholas, where is Streamfire at? You've got eight services out there. How did you come to have this new empire, this new plumbing empire happen?
Yes, exactly. So the last time I've been on the show was 2 years ago. And this was at the launch of Streamfire, when we set out the mission to bring the most talented creators into the TV space and help them establish to distribute the content on TV spaces, such as Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Android TV. And until now, we've launched eight different services. All are in the outdoor and sports sector. Our most recent ones are Car Magazine TV and Mountain Bike TV. And yes, it's doing pretty well. So like, we are finding the most talented creators in these spaces and bring them all together to distribute the first class TV channel experience for the viewer. And to mention this, or like to point it out how well it goes, one of our channels, which is called Duck Hunting TV in the waterfall sector, has been nominated as the top rated hunting channel in the entire Roku universe.
Was this by design to focus first on outdoor adventures, outdoor services, or did this is the way that it went in terms of the entrepreneurs who wanted to get their channels on your service?
Well, it's a little bit of both, but like, what we wanted to get out is like interest first content. So we wanted to find communities that have like kind of a strong following, that are like really into something. And there we figured out that, like, especially like the outdoor and sports sector, if you find like different niches, you have like really strong and engaging communities, and that are a little bit also like underrepresented in the TV space. So we kind of saw this hint that like viewers and like parts of these communities are looking for something on TV. So like, especially like if we're thinking about like cycling or hunting, there's not much out there in the TV space if you think about these mainstream broadcasters, and we found kind of our niches to place ourselves in and bring content creators into the TV space, broadcast it, and like have an engaged community to follow it.
With each of these channels, whether it's Duck Hunting TV or Big City TV or the Cycling Channel, et cetera, what kind of content is it? Is it all shot in location? Does it deal with what kind of content or aspects of the genre get showcased?
Mm-hmm. So as I said, like we are working with content creators. So we are like not broadcasting professional mainstream content, but like by individuals or smaller companies. And it's set for the most part all across the United States. Some is in Europe. And we are focusing on like kind of a interest first, story second principle. So like, it's all about the interest. So you tune into one of our channels, let's say Paragliding TV, it will be paragliding 24/7. So you will not get like something else. It's all about the focus on paragliding. And the second part is that we are looking to bring you good stories within paragliding. So to keep you engaged and like kind of follow it through for 24/7 experience.
Let's say I'm watching paragliding TV. What will I find there? What is paragliding all about? and what will the content, whether I'm watching at this time or that time, show?
So like if you're talking like for paragliding TV specifically, each of our channels are designed for first a 24/7 experience where we have a curated playlist, a schedule, and in paragliding exactly, there's a mixture of like flying content, but also then tutorials and lessons to improve your paragliding skills or to figure out new stuff. In addition to the 24/7 experience, we also have a video on demand library, which we will be even increasing within the next coming month. So if you will tune in about 2 months time of our Roku channels, you'll be seeing a paragliding TV with 24/7 experience, but then library of around 300 assets in the video on demand space.
We're speaking with Nicholas Trenkler. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Streamfire, the multi-channel bundle, which is now playing on Roku, on Amazon Fire TV, on smart TV sets that have the Android TV operating system, and maybe coming to other multi-channel bundles or smart TV sets and devices near you. Nicholas joins us live from Vienna, Austria, already prime time their time, in exclusive half-hour interview. This half-hour on Tomorrow will be televised. We are just getting started. Big two-hour edition coming your way on this Friday afternoon. Hopefully for a fantastic weekend all around the U.S. of A. and around the world, too. Simon Albon with you live from New York. 7 degrees, almost quarter past the hour. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Whatever you do, don't miss our episode, our next episode, Monday afternoon at 3:10 Eastern, New Pacific. We have an amazing hour in store for you. Two exclusive half-hour interviews. On our first half hour, we will have the Chief Strategy Officer of Telly. That's the controversial new advanced smart TV project where about 500,000 people will have the opportunity to get a smart television set, a souped-up smart TV set, free. There is a catch. We'll talk about that with Dallas Lawrence. But believe me, this could be one of the big stories in television, in the TV world this year. And then our second half hour, we will have the new top executive and chief creative officer of Chime TV, that's the Asian American owned television service, and that is Takeshi Chang. So be sure to join us. That's going to be Dallas Lawrence from Telly and Takeshi Chang from Chime TV, both with us in the radio exclusive interviews right here exclusively Monday, 3:10 Eastern Pacific on Tomorrow Be Televised. And get your questions, get your feedback, get your chat room bug going, because it's going to be, I think, one very special episode, one of the most special episodes we will be doing all year long. Nicholas, go back to Doug Hunting Television. Are you surprised that how long has it been running on Streamfire? And are you surprised that it's gotten the kind of attention it's getting by customers on Roku?
So as I said, we launched 2 years ago. And since these 2 years, it's a steady growth of all of our channels. So we see, especially within the engagement rate, a very, very high engagement rate as we have such a committed community of almost up to an hour per viewing session with certain channels. And for example, the cycling channel and the duck hunting TV channel, they're constantly rated in the top 50 sports of the Roku section. So like kind of the 50 most popular channels of the Roku sports section.
Mm-hmm. And that's all sports, not just hunting, all sports.
Yes, exactly. So if you look through the sports category, well, of course, if you start with like FUBU TV and like the big ones, and then cycling channel and duck hunting TV channel by Streamfire are continuously in the top 50.
Mm-hmm. How much content is on each service? What, like 300 hours, 400 hours, 500 hours at a time? And do you rotate content? Let's say where a particular series or special will run a month or two and then be replaced by something else down the line.
Yes. So like as we mentioned, we are finding the most talented creators for each channel. And we're working per channel around 200 to 300 hours. This was a good guess. And we curated this then into the 24/7 scheduling. Of course, there will be reruns. But our strategy with scheduling is to get into the mind of the viewer and look out of the analytics what's the average patterns of viewing. And then if you go into the average pattern of viewing, you should not be seeing any reruns. That's the strategy that behind us. So like kind of for certain channels, it's like different per channel, but we know, okay, like kind of this average pattern is to watch at this certain time, at this day of the time, and you will not then get a second rerun if you watch a week later.
Mm-hmm. What's the audience like for these services? Is it what you expected in terms of demographics? I mean, is it, let's say, senior citizens versus Gen A, Gen Z, Gen Y, Gen X, millennials? What's the sense of the audience, these services?
In terms of the audience, so 80% of our viewership is coming from the USA, and then 10% more from Canada, and the rest 10% all around the world. And yes, it's more the older audience, so like our typical target audience is 50 plus until to seniors, and a good household income. I would say the most surprising term of demographics is that it's quite evenly split between male and female viewership. Mm. What we expected was more of a male-dominated viewership, but it's almost 50-50 between them.
And what do are there certain characteristics of what the men like in the programming versus what the women like?
This we don't know, but like kind of we see a consistent 50-50 split. So it may be, after all, that both enjoy the same type of content.
Mm-hmm. One of the other services you have is Big City Television. What's that all about?
So Big City TV, this was our first channel, and what we started it around the time when you had like the COVID pandemic and all the lockdowns, and our idea was to bring in traveling to your living room. And we started working with content creators in the travel space, but also, which I think is really interesting, to start working with tourism agencies of different cities, like also New York, to bring their content into the living room. And people then don't have to like travel around, especially in times where it's maybe not so safe as it was 2 years ago, but rather can like see all the fascinating stuff that's to see in the world just on the smart TV.
Is the programming on that channel arranged, let's say, so that you have 3 hours of things about New York, or 4 hours about San Francisco, or 5 hours about London, or 3 hours about Japan or Tokyo? How is the programming? Is it arranged by city? Is it arranged by country or type of travel? How does that channel work? Be a little more specific.
It's arranged by city, but it's like more short form more videos by city. So like videos are between 5 to 10 minutes usually. And then the idea is to bring you all around the world. So like you will not stay at one city like for too long time. So like there will not be like 2 hours of New York, but like, let's say you're like watching New York and then you're jumping across the ocean to Tokyo, let's say. And after having watched a little bit of Tokyo, you're going to Lisbon in Europe. But in addition, as like with every channel, we offer a VOD library for people to then basically put their own playlist together, and like kind of if they are not satisfied with the 24/7 stream at the moment, they can like look through the different content and watch their own videos, how like they prefer it, the viewership prefer it. And as already mentioned, we're working on an update with that within 2 months time, you will have around 200 to 300 content assets per channel to be able to look through.
Now, three of your 8 services deal with bicycles in some way. You have the cycling channel, then you have a mountain bike TV channel, and you have a motorbikes and engines channel. So explain the difference between each of those three.
Yes, exactly. So in this broader sense, we found that there is a niche that is underrepresented but has a really big community. What we see in studies is that like people may use it also like as a replacement for a Peloton, in a sense, to be like cycling in front and like kind of watching the TV channel. And the idea is to bring then different segments of kind of the cycling channel is like all about like amateur road races. So like there you like kind of feel in this road racing environment. And also like when you watch, you feel like kind of you're on a road race. mountain bike is we're like more, of course, off-road in the mountains, off-road cycling with a lot of like stories around it. So it's like not just like where you feel the races, but like kind of it's often like a beautiful scenery of like what you see if you like ride around the trails. And then motorbikes and engines, there we are like actually with the motorcycles. And this channel is not so much about riding them, but building them together. So like there we have found a niche in like the coffee racer garage community of buying old motorbikes and renovating and building them back together into a neat piece. And there you can kind of see the progress over the time, how motorbikes are being renovated and built.
In a moment, we'll find out how Streamfire is doing for its networks with advertising and what is going to be down the road for this very unique service. Our guest in this first half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon is Nicholas Pentler. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Streamfire. It's the multi-channel bundle featuring, at this point, all outdoor-oriented services. And he joins us live from Vienna, Austria, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy with wherever you may be across the country, around the world. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 70 degrees near the bottom of the hour. And our remaining moments, if you have a question or comment for Nicholas, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, if you're coming late on any episode, or you want to catch up on episodes we've had recently, all you have to do is go to our homepage 24/7. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Or check out our 24/7 website. That's tomorrowwillbetelevised.com. That's tomorrowwillbetelevised.com. Or check out any of our wonderful growing lineup of terrific podcast platform affiliates. Areas like Podchaser, Pod Paradise, Podvine, Spotify, Verbal, Amazon Music, Apple and Google Podcasts, iTunes, iHeartRadio's Podcast Network, and many others. And if there is a podcast site that you like very much and they're not taking our show, let them know you'd like to have Tomorrow Be Televised there for you to hear on a regular basis. Let me know who to talk to. We'll talk with them, and we'll make it happen, just like we have the other podcast sites that take this program now in its 16th year. Nicholas, first of all, are all these channels ad-supported? And if so, how is the ad support coming in?
Yes, so the business model behind all the channels are that they're ad-supported via programmatic video ads. And this is also how our creators are then being paid. So there's a revenue split between Streamfire and the creators. And the model is like kind of, or like how it works is how you know your all your fast free TV channels. So like basically you're watching, and then we will have ad breaks where you get in programmatic video ads. And of course, the market situation right now for advertising in TV is a little bit tougher, but still we are, given the market situation, we are quite happy of it, especially as it's so specialized. And in the outdoor section, there are like quite some companies that want to find this target audience. So we still have quite good fill rates that we're happy with. And especially like now when the summer is getting over again and we're getting into like the fall, Christmas period is like always stronger. Of course, we will see how the economic development will be if there's like kind of economic downturn, or if we're already leveled up with the bottom and if it's going up again.
Are you finding that services like the cycling channel are getting, for example, the bike makers or the tire makers or something like Big C Television is getting airlines or cruise lines to sponsor on a regular basis, car magazine TV, the automakers, et cetera, et cetera?
So as is programmatic, they're like not like direct sponsorships, but companies are betting it within a bigger network of placements. Kind of sectors that we see like now that we, before the summer, that we've been seeing a lot is like tourism. What we see as well with us, of course, is insurances. They are very likely to be sponsoring us, and also the automobile industry is placing ads across of all our channels, especially like if you're like talking about outroad pickup trucks and all this.
As you know, we just recently had last month the Digital Content New Fronts We also had the upfronts. Was there any thought about coming to New York and doing an upfront, a new front event where the advertising community could become more engaged in what you're doing?
Yes. So we are continuously planning to do step by step to go into the U.S. market, especially since 80% of our viewers are American, and therefore we are very interesting target for American advertisers. We've been 2 months ago exhibiting at the South by Southwest conference in Austin, Texas, and in 2 weeks' time I will be attending VidCon in California, Los Angeles, Anaheim, California. So yeah, we kind of try to do a step by step, but of course we have to think about what's progressive and not all at once.
What do you see StreamFire ultimately becoming? Are there more channels that will be premiering later this year or in 2024 down the road? And do you see different niches being addressed, whether it's outdoor adventure, whether it's children's programming, whether it's programming aimed at senior at the mature market, if you will? What do you see as the near and the long-term future of StreamFire?
Yes, thank you for this question. So as a long-term strategy, we definitely see us as the main platform for creators to go if they want to be broadcasting their content on TV. For now, we've seen that the outdoor content is a good vertical to start with to get a high engagement rate, but over the we want to fill every interest that we can think about. I would say the one important thing is that we, the one part that we don't want to go into is political. So it's all about the interest and not about different worldviews or everything. Yes, basically be the platform around creators, help them to distribute the content on TV. And we see because we made a big list of different interests and niches and the community where we see a target is around 300 to 400 different StreamFire channels that are being backed by us. For the nearer future, if you're talking about the next 2 months, we are of course constantly talking with new creators to bring them on. We bring on one channel every couple months. Interest that we are currently looking at is either to extensify the car magazine. We see some interest there. Or find a new sport. We would to explore a little bit the winter section as well, so skiing or ice hockey.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about getting in some way, either a channel or through your creators, let's say scripted television, interactive programming, maybe ultimately the ability when people watch your service to order products and services directly from the TV set?
Yes, of course, this is a possibility in the future. Currently, we are all about building up the brand and the platform around StreamFire. So it's getting people to watch it through our facilities and also through our homepage, streamfire.com. And by bringing in viewers, engagement, and also content to leverage up bargaining power at one point to negotiate with platforms to bring them into their space as well.
The name of the organization is StreamFire. 8 channels currently running on Roku, on Amazon Fire TV, on Android TV, and soon at other smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles near you. For more details about the organization online, here's where you go. StreamFire, that's STREEM, fire.com. That's StreamFire, STREEM, fire.com. Nicholas Plano, the Chief Executive Officer of StreamFire, thanks again for joining us. Congratulations on what you've done so far. Sounds like a lot of big things coming your way in the months and years ahead, and we'd love to have you back. And anytime you and your folks pop into this neck of the woods in New Ever York, we'd love to have you in person.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to seeing you in person in New York.
Absolutely, Nicholas. Take care. Have a super weekend.
Bye-bye.
Nicholas Stringer from StreamFire joining us live from Vienna, Austria. Coming up in the next half hour, we will talk to the executive producer and director of the first and the last episode of the new Peacock sensation based on a true story, co-starring from the Big Bang Theory and the flight attendant Kaylee Cuoco. We will have Alex Bueno joining us live from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. To www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 85 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home every weekend for the Richard Miller Report. He's got a lot to say, I'm sure, about the NBA Finals, Game 4 from Miami tonight on ABC, your local ABC station, plus the last in the Stanley Cup Finals, Major League Baseball, and a whole lot more. The Richard Miller Report, check it out tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of a big two-hour episode of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon of June 2023. Time to have with you live from wherever you are. Delighted to have you with us wherever you are. More great guests coming your way in the 90 minutes ahead if you just joined us, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and make that call to 646-652-2906 or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Yesterday, Peacock started a brand new scripted series. They're calling it a thriller com. It's called Based on a True Story. And I want to share with you some thoughts from its creator, showrunner, executive producer, and key writer, Craig Rosenberg. Here's what he had to say, according to a press release. Over the last decade, a true crime phenomenon has swept over America. Podcasts, documentaries, fictional shows based on true stories, they dominate the culture. Murderers have become celebrities. And celebrities have become murderers, which inspired me to create this show. I became fascinated with the idea of a relatable married couple whose youthful dreams hadn't come to fruition and who saw the true crime tidal wave as an opportunity to change their lives and save their marriage. Well, Los Angeles setting, the city where everybody wants to be famous, became a vivid backdrop to our story of fame, ambition, aspiration, and murder. Please sit back and join Ava and Nathan as they try to navigate the dangerous proposal they make. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, another interview exclusive, the executive producer and the director of the first and the final of these 8-episode series, Alex Bueno. Alex, good to have you with us. Congratulations on how the show is going so far.
No, thank you so much. Nice to be on.
Pleasure to have you on, Alex. What kind of feedback have you gotten from either viewers or the critics so far about Based on True Story?
It sounds like people are really enjoying it. I hope that remains to be the case. We tried to make a really fun and pulpy show that would be both thrilling but also funny, and it sounds like that's how people are taking it. So far, so good.
In watching the trailer, the thought of thriller com, you know, like rom-com came to mind because in some ways it's a thriller. In some ways it's a satire about the whole idea of true crime investigating and series about true crime. What do you think about that philosophy?
Did you make up thriller com? I like that term.
I got to be honest. Yep.
I like it. I you know, it's funny. We had spent, obviously, you know, almost the past year thinking about the tone of this show. The tone of the show is always one of the trickier things, you know, because look, it's got serial killer in it, and there's murder. There's some pretty gruesome murders in a fun way, but we wanted it. But there's also this, it's, you know, kind of a love story about a married couple that's trying to hold their marriage together. And it was always this real, like, needle to thread of, like, wait a minute, what is this? And thriller com really does kind of capture it. That's what we were going for, was something that would be fun, that you would feel invested in the characters, particularly in this couple, that you would care that their marriage is, you know, falling apart and that you want to see them hold it together. And that when they make a series of, you know, bad decisions, that you would not immediately say, these guys are idiots, I don't care about them, but that you would be rooting for them and that you would think, oh no, I love you guys. I want this marriage to stay together. And, for us, you know, what really holds it together is how just adorable Kaylee Cuoco and Chris Messina are as this married couple, and how much they're so much fun, and they've got such incredible chemistry together. And, you know, we want to see them win. We want to see them figure it out, even though everything you're doing is to the contrary. And you're hopefully feeling like, no, don't do that. No, it's, oh, come on. No, come on. You can, you know, and all the sort of classic you know, knucklehead, screwball comedy, you know, tone.
Mm-hmm. How did Craig Rosenberg and you and everybody else involved, how did you all get together to do this?
Well, I was brought in, you know, after the show had been sold. So I was brought in at the pilot stage. Craig Rosenberg, you know, the writer and creator, came up with the idea, came up with the premise, worked with Jason Bateman's company, Aggregate, to, you know, develop the idea and sell the idea. And Peacock bought it and picked it up. And then at a certain point, they were ready to hire a director, and they found me. And, you know, I had to come in and pitch them on, well, here's what I would do with it, and here's what I like about it, and here's why it sort of echoes the things that I'm interested in. And what I immediately gravitated toward was, you know, that it's a fun idea, that it's smart, that I thought Craig's writing was really, really smart. I liked that it was about something, that he was really, truly writing satire, that, you know, one of what Craig's you know, his statements about the show don't reveal is that, you know, Craig is Australian. Craig comes from Melbourne, Australia. He has this wonderfully amused perspective on American culture. And this was one of the idiosyncratic things about our culture that really, to hear him tell it, kind of fascinated him, was that, you know, wow, America is really obsessed with, like, true crime in a way that, you know, it certainly does seem like it's an international, you know, obsession, but there's something about Americans and the way that we, obsess over murder and obsess over our crime shows, that he wanted to kind of poke at and say, what's going on here? What is it? What does it say about our culture? And to create, on his end, to create a satire about that culture, you know, that there's something that is, you know, what does it say about culture that is taking what in other formats is, you know, there are victims, there are truly traumatic, horrific crimes being committed, and yet the true crime genre and true crime podcasts and true crime shows are all finding ways to monetize that and merchandise that, and he thought that very idea was, there was something there to create a satire about, you know, a cultural satire about. And so to me, that was what was really appealing. I was like, wow, so because I like, you know, I'm a comedy person. I like comedies, but I like comedies that are smart and that are trying to say something and they're about something, that there's some gravitas to it. You know, it helps me understand how do you direct this? What's it about? You know, what visually, what are you even trying to do? Unless you understand that it's really trying to say something deeper and more subtextual. And so that's what really drew me in, was that it was trying to be about something. And yet Craig, and the way he wrote it, has got such a wonderful and fun and amused perspective on it, you know, that it's not deadly serious and we're not trying to make something. You have to understand how important this is. It's not important. It's fun. It's funny. He's a very funny guy. He's got a really great sense of humor, and that's how he approaches things that are serious. He approaches it with comedy and is a sort of the vehicle to get in the door is the funny.
You're hearing Alex Buono. He is the executive producer and the director of the first and the final episode of Peacock's new, I'll call it, thriller comp series based on a true story, co-starring Kaylee Cuoco and Chris Messina, along with Tom Bateman as well. And Alex joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom and I with you from the other side of the United States of America and Nueva York specifically, 69 degrees at the top of the hour. The sun is breaking out. The clouds are breaking out, too. We are getting rid of this whole air quality situation that paralyzed us for most of the week. Happy year aboard wherever you are, and we invite you to take part in the program. Interact with our guests. Make a call. How you do it? You use this number, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Again, we have a very big Monday hour for you on Tomorrow Be Televised. Coming your way next Monday, our lead guest will be the Chief Strategy Officer of Telly. That's the controversial new smart TV set venue where about half a million people are going to have the opportunity to get a smart TV set with a lot of interesting bells and whistles free. Dallas Lawrence is that Chief Strategy Officer. He'll be with us in the first half hour. In the second half hour, another interview exclusive, the new head of Chime TV, the Asian American Programming Service, Chief Creative Officer, Chime TV, Takeshi Chang. It's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, near the Pacific. A big hour in store for you right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Alex, I recently saw an interview on YouTube with Robert Butler. He's the director that, among other things, really set the tone for one of the great groundbreaking series of all time on NBC, Hill Street Blues, back in the early 1980s. And one of the things he said that he wanted to do a show where he got it right. He got the tone right. He got the context right. And he was willing to say to all his superiors, we want this show to be as messy and ugly and crazy it could be. And everyone believed him. They stuck behind him. And, of course, it had a great run. Was there sort of tone that you wanted to establish with based on a true story that was sort of like that, you know, like a very special tone that, given the fact you're doing both the first episode and the final episode, that you wanted to establish?
Absolutely. I mean, tone is the number, it's the hardest thing to crack on any show. It's the thing we spent the most time talking about. It's hard to define, you know, and we spent a lot of time talking, you know, it's Craig's show and it's Craig's vision for the show, Craig Rosenberg. And my job coming in to direct the pilot and direct the final episode was to essentially understand Craig's vision, interpret it, figure out how to put it on camera. What does that look like? What does it sound like? And then defend it. You know, I was brought in to then stick around and help the other, you know, there would be another three directors would come in and direct other episodes. And it was part of my job was to then teach them what the tone was and what the language of the show was, develop a sort of visual vocabulary for the show. And all of that feeds into like the sort of defense of the tone and the defense of the idea of the show. And so, yeah, it was a lot of conversations. There was a lot of initial finding, you know, the common ideas. You know, Craig talked a lot about Alfred Hitchcock and Hitchcockian suspense, and we talked about how, you know, we both loved that, and yet that can also feel a little dated. And the other television shows have done that, and it's felt if you just go for hard Hitchcock, it's a little bit like, yeah, we get it, but that's sort of like it's already been reinterpreted by so many filmmakers. So we talked about those filmmakers like Brian De Palma and Sam Raimi and more recently like the Coen brothers and, you know, Quentin Tarantino and people that clearly also love and respect Hitchcock as much as we do. And it was a finding the right language and literally building a Bible that would say, these are the colors that we use. This is the kinds of shots that we use. This is the way that we would frame up a close-up, you know, this is the way that we would want to control the color palette. You know, it's a world that there's an aspect to it, which is very aspirational. We have a married couple and their marriage is falling apart and they're constantly comparing themselves to their rich LA friends who they can't quite keep up with. They're not as rich as them. Their house is not as big as theirs. And how do you tell that story visually? And we felt like, for example, you know, well, the aspirational world of West Side, you know, Los Angeles and Malibu and the Pacific Palisades are these rich greens and blues and this kind of angles and this kind of tone. And then the other part of Los Angeles would be these like muddier and more yellows and mustards and pinks and yellow and that, you know, the photography would be like this. And so we set up a rule book and then helped, you know, the other directors understand what the rules were. How do we approach this show so that we're all making the same show?
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing, too, about the couple, played by Kelly Cuoco and Chris Messina, is that they're not the glamorous, like, heart-to-heart couple that Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powell played on television for almost a decade or before that. Mr. and Mrs. North, played by Barbara Britton and Richard Denning in the 50s, who were, like, up-and-coming, you know, executives or glamorous people. Or fabulous personalities. I mean, this is a couple that is sort of like really grounded in the fact that they're not living the great life. They're living the okay life, and they fight about it all the time.
Yeah, no, they're definitely people who are watching their dreams slowly die. The dream that brought them together, you know, 10 years ago as a young couple. He was a tennis star that was going to be the next Andre Agassi, and you know. She was his partner in life, and they were this cool tennis couple, and they were going to live that, you know. And he got injured and dropped out of tennis, and She became a real estate agent, but she's not really that good at it. She's not able to sell those big million-dollar listings that she aspires to. And so you're watching a couple that just hopefully feels like any of us, that feels like, you know, I'm not where I want to be. It's putting a lot of strain on my relationship. I don't want to get a divorce, but this isn't working. We got to do something. You know, what we used to be such a team. We used to do things together. We used to share things together. We don't have anything like that anymore. And so it's about a couple that is making a really poor choice, but they're doing it for all the right reasons. They want to save their marriage. They want to do something together. They want to feel like they used to feel. And so all of that is about, you know, how much do we believe this relationship? And we were just incredibly lucky to have, you know, Kaylee Cuoco and Chris Messina as just such a believable, grounded, real couple, you know, and who they feel like they've been together for 10 years. They feel like they have been in love for a long time, but you can feel that it's starting to fall apart, but you want them to stay together because they're so, you can tell, oh, they're probably so adorable, but I don't like to see them fight. This is really, you know, and so, but there had to be a little bit of fighting in order for you to believe that this marriage is on the rocks. So it's a delicate dance to build that relationship where they're believably starting to crumble, and yet you as an audience don't hate them, and you still care that they stay together, and you feel as much involved in that relationship as they are.
Alex, when it comes to bringing all the elements together, Craig's vision, episode by episode, and the totality of the series, the chemistry of the actors, especially Kaylee and Chris as the couple in question, your directing touches, how everything comes together, how much of the burden is on you and your fellow directors versus Kaylee and Chris and the other actors versus Craig?
it's really an amalgam of all of that. I mean, I would say that the burden is probably most on Craig, who created this world and who, you know, continues to spin the plates as he's finishing writing the scripts. There's a tremendous, I suppose there's a burden on Chris and Kaylee, although they're such, again, wonderfully gifted and grounded actors that they make it feel so effortless. But truthfully, if that didn't work, then there would be no show. If they didn't have that inherent chemistry, there's not very much that the rest of us can do to fake it. You can try to direct your way out of that box, but if they just didn't seem like a believable couple, then there's only so many tricks you can pull before the audience is like, hold on a second, I don't buy this couple at all, or I don't buy that they've been married for 10 years, or even worse, I don't care. So ultimately, yeah, there's a tremendous burden on Chris and Kaylee to be a believable and loving couple, that I suppose to show up every day and to allow that chemistry, you know, to enjoy each other and to be present and to, you know, it's not just about knowing your lines, but it's about really being dropped in. And they're both so good at that. You know, they both have different skills. Kaylee's so instinctual. She's such a comedy pro. She keeps everything so light and so fun. There's so much laughter on set. Chris is an actor who is so grounded and he's so trained and he, you know, really wants to talk about what is the scene about, and he wants to get it right, and he'll do as many takes as you ask him for. He'll give you a million different versions. And the two of them, I mean, it's quite a different performance style, but they really complemented each other in that, you know, Kaylee really lifted him and lightened him and brought out so much comedy. He's so funny in this, and it's a side of Chris Messina that I don't know that people have seen as much. He's just so funny. And Chris really grounded Kaylee, you know, and the two of them just felt so connected that, again, that is very much like that's the burden that they had to bring to the set every day. My job was really just to, like, almost keep the continuity of the thing, to make sure that every day we were still making the same show, you know. And but I could see them, honestly, one of the harder jobs that I had was because they were enjoying each other so much and they were constantly laughing and joking and the whole crew's laughing and joking, and yet we're in the middle of some terrifying situation where I'm like, haha, yeah, we're having fun here. Guys, this is terrifying. All right, just remember, this isn't supposed to be funny. This is supposed to be really scary in this particular scene. And so I was constantly having to be like the wet blanket on everybody's fun, reminding everyone that like, yeah, no, I know everybody likes each other and you have great chemistry, but this scene is supposed to be scary. So again, a big part of my job was just to maintain that, keep everybody in it, keep everybody in the scene and remind everyone this is what's happening. And, you know, find that balance of allowing them to be loose and allowing them to have fun, but then reminding them of the stakes and reminding them of where the drama lies in any given moment.
Based on a true story, premiered yesterday on Peacock, is available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles, in some cases through your local cable operator as well. The co-stars, Kaylee Cuoco and Chris Messina. We've got Alex Bueno. He's the executive producer, director of the first episode and the final episode of this series. And he's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sam, I'm with you from the other side of the U.S. of A. Here in Nueva York, 69 degrees as we get toward the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment, many minutes with Alex, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Coming up at the top of the hour, our classic trivia question of the week. We've got a bunch of nice prizes in store for you if your first correct answer, so get your TV trivia caps on because we'll have that question for you before the top of this first hour. Anyway, Alex, was it by design that you would do the first and the final episodes? And if so, why decide to sort of be the bookend player?
I was invited to direct the pilot, and then I was then invited to stick around and be what they call a directing producer, helping the other directors understand the tone. And then I was invited to direct the finale. I wasn't hired originally to say, here's what you're going to do. You're going to do the first and the last. I think it was a kind of more of an organic process where Craig and Michael Costigan and Roxy Rodriguez at Aggregate, where they're running the show. They're the executive producers. They're the ones that are kind of reading the tea leaves and making these decisions of, you know, who do we like to sort of bring this home? And, you know, I think by the point they were finally deciding who to direct the finale, I had just been a part of the show for so long at that point and felt like I understood it well enough and I understood what Craig really wanted. And in a way I had the greatest shorthand knowledge. I had already worked with the actors. We all got along really well. So I was able to kind of help them bring it home in a way that would, I think, set, you know, ending any season is always tricky. You know, you want to really land the plane. And I think I was in probably a better position than a director coming in to do the first episode that they'd ever done and not really understanding all the rules yet.
Mm-hmm. So far, the series has gotten very high scores, solid scores from Rotten Tomatoes, if you see that website, both the critics and the viewers. If you get a second season from Peacock, would you like to keep this same couple aboard for another true crime thriller com, or do you want to make it more of an anthology series to see how a different couple tackles another true crime situation?
This is all in the behind the brain of Craig Rosenberg. So I'm not sure what he has planned, but I can tell you for myself, even as an audience member, I would want to see what happens with this couple. I find Chris Messina and Kaylee Cuoco so watchable and so lovable. I want to stay with them. We end the season on a cliffhanger. I want to know what happens. You know, it's funny. We ended the season on a cliffhanger, and there's this people have asked me, like, what happens next? And I'm like, I don't know what happens next. That's a Craig question. I don't even know if Craig knows what's happening next. I know he has a grand plan for the show, but he has not revealed that to me or to anybody else. So personally, I would love to stick with these characters and find out what happens next.
Alex, before you go, any thoughts about the new Directors Guild agreement with the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers? What's the sense out there of the board has approved it? Any sense out there of whether it be ratified?
That's a great question. I don't know if it's going to be ratified. I of course, am 100% support. I'm in both the Writers Guild and in the Directors Guild. I support the strike. I support the everything the Writers Guild is trying to achieve. I understand the frustration on the part of some of the writers that the directors were able to strike a deal so quickly and the writers are still holding out. Does that mean that the enough directors will try to hold out longer? I don't know. I know that the Directors Guild, I mean, I think that from what I understand, they fought really hard and I guess I don't have a great answer for you. I think speaking on behalf of the part of me that is in the Writers Guild, the part of me that's in the Directors Guild, all of my filmmaking friends, nobody's enjoying this. Nobody wants to be on strike. We all just want to get back to work. I would love to almost take the onus of this negotiation off of the heads of my fellow directors and my fellow writers and place it on the heads of the producers who we're negotiating with.
Mm-hmm. It seems that one of the big sticking points has been this issue of artificial intelligence. And you get the sense, and I've seen the picket lines, I saw them last month at the Upfront events here in New York, that there's a real sense of the writers don't want AI, no matter how it blossoms in terms of how it's used to create and produce programming, TV, movies, et cetera, to be obsolete. The Directors Guild contract does, for the first time, say, hey, AI is not a person. Generative AI is not going to replace writers. Can that structure of that contract, can that open the door for the writers and the producer alliance to get back to the bargaining table?
I think it's great that the producers have opened the door to talk about AI. And I think that it's a big step in the right direction. I understand the frustration in the agreement as it's been defined for the directors. One of the provisions of the agreement is that AI cannot, I'm paraphrasing, and forgive me if I'm not getting this like legally correct. The vibe is AI cannot be used unless the director approves it. I think it opens the door to directors being put in a position where they're being advised by their agent, hey, they want to use AI, so if you want the job, you need to be cool with it. And that is a problem. The problem with AI, and look, I've monkeyed around with AI, it's both incredibly fun and miraculous and also terrifying. And the fact is that I understand the desire to treat it like it's this incredible magic trick, you know, but the fact is it's not magic, you know, it's the AI algorithm does not have an imagination. It's pulling these ideas from somewhere. And that somewhere is a person, you know, that somewhere is somebody else's work and that somebody else is not being compensated. And that is the inherent problem. And so there needs to be a way, and I don't know if this way even exists yet, but there needs to be a way to give credit to the underlying idea that the AI is drawing upon as it's scraping the internet for ideas that already exist. But yes, to answer your question, I think that it is a positive step and that the producers have been willing to put anything down on paper that is dealing with AI and saying, well, AI is not a person and AI cannot take a job. That's all super, super positive, and I applaud that we're getting somewhere. I don't know if it's going far enough. I don't know that for the Writers Guild, I don't think that's enough for the Writers Guild. I think that they're in a little bit of a worse position than directors in the immediate future. I think we're about to see I think the SAG negotiation will be even more instructive. It's kind of easy to understand how a picture can be manipulated from other pictures. You know, earlier on, in the early, you know, now that we're, a month into the AI revolution, there was a meme that was somebody had typed in, it was a text to video. It was Will Smith eating spaghetti. And it was this crazy video of Will Smith from, you know, millions of different images of him like eating a plate of spaghetti, and it was grotesque and weird, but you could see that, oh my God, once this gets good, this is crazy. But you could also immediately see that, like, oh, this isn't like the AI algorithm like made up images of Will Smith. This is literally pictures of him that have all been manipulated, and those pictures belong to somebody. And also at some point they belong in part to Will Smith. And so I think as soon as the actors and SAG get involved with the AI conversation, I think it may heat up a bit, because I think that the idea that an actor could be replaced, or there, you know, which is already happening, obviously, you know, but Carrie Fisher is, you know, recreated in Star Wars based on images of her. The actors and the conflict that actors have with AI will, I think, the acuteness of that will bring the AI conversation to a some kind of a flashpoint, I think.
The name of the program on Peacock is Based on a True Story, co-starring Kaley Cuoco and Chris Messina, and you can find it now on Peacock. The Mega Content Service NBC Universal is available on smart TV sets, smart devices, multi-channel bundles, and in some markets, a cable system near you. For more details about the service online, you go to www.peacocktv.com. That's www.peacocktv.com. Alex Buono, executive producer, director of the first and the final episode of Based on a True Story, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure all the way, and thank you for the additional thoughts on the situation with the Directors Guild and the Writers Guild situation. And hopefully the Writers Guild can get back to that bargaining table with the producers and work this out. It can be done, and both sides have to communicate. That's the big super step. And maybe the Directors deal may be a factor in that. Alex, thanks again for coming on. Have a wonderful weekend. It's been a pleasure all the way.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Again, have a great weekend. Take care.
You too.
Alex Buono from Based on a True Story joining us live from Los Angeles. Coming up in our next hour, we'll kick it off with Jennifer Jackson. She is one of the key people at Stellar Network, Central City Productions, the parent company of that service. We'll also have the executive producer and director of the new Hulu Made for TV movie, Jenna Cavell and Kelly Talley, respectively. Plus, we will have our classic trivia question coming your way near the bottom of the hour. Plus, also in the bottom of this half hour, in celebration of Beth. All that in the hour ahead. It begins as we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 85 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Every weekday morning on BTR, it's the January Jones Show. It's a show all about women and how they're being empowered more and more. The January Jones Show, check it out, weekday mornings here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at youtube.com. Welcome back to the second hour of this two-hour edition of Smartly Televised. I'm a wonderful Friday afternoon here in New York and around the city and country and around the world. Simon Applebaum with you along for the ride. Welcome to those just joining us at the top of the hour. 69 degrees, partly sunny. The air quality alert is still with us until midnight. Hopefully it will be finally done by then. If you're in an area, by the way, like Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., part south or southeast, that is still impacted by the air quality hazard situation, please, if you need to stay home, stay home. If you have to go out, wear a mask. Take extra time going to where you're going. Use mass transit if you can. And be with us. We love your company. This is the promo about TV's current and future. And we want to hear from you this hour. We've got some wonderful guests in the 60 minutes ahead. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If there is a Mount Rushmore for entrepreneurs who have launched programming over the decades aimed at African Americans, there are quite a few people who could apply for that. Byron Allen. There's Shonda Rhimes, there's Tyler Perry, there's Don Cornelius, Ellis Haysett, the person who did Soul, Tony Brown, and a bunch of others. And certainly a major contender would be the organization known as Central City Productions, founded by Don Jackson more than a half century ago. They have done a lot in terms of syndicated programming, and now they are doing a television network, now available on different cable systems, including Verizon Fios TV and Charter Spectrum. It's called Stellar TV, or in some markets, the Stellar Network. Joining us live to talk about what is going on with Stellar and some of the syndicated productions that Central City is doing, including the Black Music Honors that premiered on Stellar Network last weekend. We are delighted to have the Executive Vice President of the company and the service, Jennifer Jackson. Jennifer, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. And Jennifer is joining us, by the way, from the wonderful Windy City of Chicago, Illinois. First of all, Jennifer, how is Stellar Network doing?
It's doing pretty well. We're constantly, to our surprise, but at the same time really thrilled to get emails from people who are stumbling upon the network and asking for, you know, what else are you airing? When is your schedule going to be uploaded? And we're really liking the content that you're putting on this channel. It's different. And so for us just starting up, with the amount of distribution that we have, we're pleased.
Mm-hmm. This network is one of a group of services that have started over the last year or two that are owned mm-hmm. by African Americans, Black Americans, Black American organizations, and it is either programming for that group as well as other communities of color, as well as the rest of us. What is Stellar's mandate in the scheme of things?
Yeah, so our mandate really is to promote positive images of people of color. You know, it's exhausting, you know, watching the news, and all you see are, you know, are people getting shot and killed. And so, you know, we want to change the paradigm of how people see people of color. We want them to see that, you know, we're contributors to a planet that we live on, that we are, we're great people, we work hard, and we're not what you see on the news. We are far more than what people, what the perception that people get, you know, from the daily news. And so, you know, essentially we want to change that paradigm and promote positive images of people of color, people that we see each and every single day, people that we work with. And so that's our really, really big goal.
Mm-hmm. Over the decades, Central City, your company, has produced quite a lot of very unique programming that usually has mm-hmm. been syndicated over the weekend on broadcast stations, whether it's been the Stellar Awards, which probably mm-hmm. is the best-known gospel music award show on television and the longest-running in TV history, the Black Music mm-hmm. Honors that kicked in on Stellar last weekend, the Black College Quiz, like the GE College Bowl or Jeopardy program dealing with mm-hmm. Black culture, Black history for young people, and quite a lot. And one of the big issues, not only with your organization, but with other organizations, with all of weekend syndicated television is that broadcast stations in many markets, including New York, do not promote weekend syndicated shows. They don't run promos. Right. They don't come out press releases and so on and so forth. So is it great that you now, through Stellar TV, the Stellar Network, you now have a 24/7 home for this programming that can get publicized, that you can put press releases out nationally, and people will be able to watch because they know it's out there?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. We have to that part, that's a really, I would say, a hard job, right? And so trying to get people to find you in the midst of other channels. And what kind of message can we put out there between social media and then drilling down on all of those individual markets that we're in and just having a different message, whether it's New York City, the message is one thing. And then if it's Charlotte, North Carolina, the message would be something different. It could be a different channel for Spectrum, for example. It's not the same channel in every single market. And so it is one advantage I think that we do have that others don't have is that because we still syndicate many of our tentpole specials, it's taking advantage within our tentpole specials is pushing the Stellar Network and where to find us and using that also as a marketing tool for people to become aware of the Stellar Network and all of the things, different things that we have to offer. But you're right, having our own network and having the ability to do our own promotions and the ability to also just having, you know, as you know, in syndicated programming, it's not the same date and time. But mm-hmm. with the Stellar Network, you know, one thing that's helpful is for us to be able to promote same date, same time for any of the programs that we're airing.
I mentioned in the opening of the show, Jennifer, that the Black Music Honors that mm-hmm. premiered on Stellar Network last weekend was sort of like the network getting into second gear, because it was about a year ago that the service was announced. And it's like, when did Stellar actually launch? Stellar TV actually, did it launch like early this year, late last year?
Yeah, we actually launched in March. And I'll say that technically we're in the midst of what we would call a soft launch. And so, you know, still working because the network is brand new. We're about 3 months old at this point. We were able to get on air far more quickly than a number of other networks have been able to get on the air. But with that being said, we're in the midst of a soft launch, which is typically is 1 year. And so during that launch, you know, it's teaching people on where to find you. It's making sure that our programming is airing in the way that it should, having all of the promos that you mentioned earlier. And even technically, just making sure that everything is right on point. And so with most new launches, typically, they say the first year is a soft launch, and then in your second year, you're full speed ahead.
Jennifer Jackson, the Executive Vice President of Stellar TV Network and the parent company Central City Productions, is our guest this half hour on Smart Be Televised. She joins us live from Chicago, Illinois. And if you have a question or comment for Jennifer, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, coming up Monday on Smart Be Televised, we will have not one, but two exclusive internet radio interviews. The first with the Chief Strategy Officer of Telly. That's the new smart TV venture where 500,000 people this summer could get a brand new souped-up smart TV set free. Lawrence is the chief strategy officer we're talking about. He will be with us as our first guest. And then the brand new top executive and chief creative officer of Chime TV. That's the network owned by and programmed for Asian American Pacific Islanders, Takeshi Cheng. That's all coming up Monday. Internet radio exclusive interviews back-to-back right here, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific and 2 p.m. Central. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So I mentioned earlier that the Black Music Honors, which you have syndicated for quite some time, premiered first on Stellar TV this past weekend. What was it like to have that? And when you were attending the taping last month, what was the atmosphere like to know that at last we have this show now on a network basis as opposed to just syndication?
Wow, I mean, it was electric. It was almost like you could take a breath, like a breath of fresh air and then a breath of relief. And so knowing that, you know, here we are for the first time being able to say to people, you could find the show here on this date and this time across the country. And so for that first run, our premiere run, with it being on our Stellar network, it's been amazing. From all of the artists that we have on with their support in helping to push out where you can see the broadcast, and just the energy that was in the room of all of the honorees, from Missy Elliott to SWV to Jeffrey Osborne to Evelyn Champagne King. And then it was amazing just to hear them talk about how honored they were to be honored by their own people, you know, because one of the things with Black Music Honors, one of our goals is that we realize that a lot of people, a lot of the artists in the music community, they're not going to be recognized on the Grammys. They're not going to be recognized on any of the other programs. And so our goal is those people who are beloved by our community, is for us to make sure that we give them their roses while they're here. You know, you're not going to see Jeffrey Osborne honored on the Grammys. It's just not going to happen. But he is beloved in the Black community. You know, it's super, super successful. And so, you know, that's the kind of feeling you get that, you know, and how much they really appreciate all of the effort and the time, and then the tributes that were done were really, really quite amazing.
Mm-hmm. How did you handle the 50th anniversary of hip-hop, which seems to be a theme that is going to be running through a lot of the award shows this year, the ones that have already happened, like the Grammys, and the ones that are going to be happening, like the BET Awards coming up in a few weeks?
But, you know, that's a really great question. We talked a lot about that. And so we didn't do much of an honor because it felt like everyone was doing an honor for the 50th anniversary of hip-hop. So what we did instead was one, we had Roxanne Shanté on the show in a sense to give her flowers while we're here. And we literally gave her 50 roses on stage to celebrate 50 years of hip hop. And then the other thing that we did is we had a performer on who's never been on an award show, but his music really resonates in the world of hip hop with our community. And that was Juvenile. It did take a lot to convince our fearless leader, Don Jackson, who you already know. We literally had to beg and must have asked him 50 different ways, can Juvenile please perform? I mean, all of the different ways that we could ask him, we did. And then finally, he gave in. And his performance, I mean, everyone in the house, you know, was standing up. It was pretty electric.
How is Stellar Network doing with advertiser support? I understand that Procter & Gamble is a major advertiser, and they may be involved also in terms of creating content, whether it's unscripted or scripted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Procter & Gamble is a huge supporter and backer of what we're doing, and so they have really been instrumental in helping us with the launch of the Stellar Network and putting dollars behind content for us to help make it a success. And then we also have the support of AT&T. We have the support of State Farm, the support of Verizon, the support of all of the different brands at General Motors, Walmart. And so we have a number of advertisers out there who are doing buys with us for the Stellar Network, which is really awesome.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of getting more cable operators like Charter and Verizon Fios to take the service, where do you stand on that? And also, are you looking at getting distribution through smart TV sets, smart devices, multi-channel bundles? Maybe even getting when the bundles are Pluto TV or Tubi or Local Now or such and such.
Well, you named them all. I mean, you know your stuff. So, as you know, connected TV is really, really big. And so we're looking to get on Samsung, on Vizio, on a number of the different connected TV platforms, as well as Pluto and Tubi and some of the other ones from a streaming perspective. And then on the MVPD side, in addition to Charter Spectrum and Verizon Fios, we're looking to get on with Cox, who's in the South, still trying to work through something with Comcast. And so, you know, as you know, this business, it is crazy. It just keeps changing and just trying to keep up with it. And with all of the different technology, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see, okay, what are they going to come up with next after connected TV? I mean, I can't imagine what it is, but with all of the technology out there, things keep changing. And so, as you already know, a number of people are dropping off from, you know, being a subscriber to cable, and then they're going over to, you know, a number of the free sites where you can get Pluto TV or Tubi, or just as easy, get it on your Samsung TV on one of their many channels, you know, as well as Vizio and a number of others. And so you're right on point. We are actively working and pitching our channel to these other platforms. What helps is that we're up and running. And so that makes a big difference because we previously pitched before, but now that we're up and running, you know, they can see, oh, they weren't just kidding around. They're serious, you know. And so we're up, we're ready. It looks good. And so we're ready to walk through those doors for all of the other opportunities.
And we should point out that according to new research, nearly 90%, if not over 90%, of all U.S. households now are connected to a smart TV or a smart TV device. And something we've talked about for a long time, it's communities of color, African Americans, Latinos, Asian American, Native Americans, that have been the big, big, big players in terms of getting the smart TV universe up to where it is today. Jennifer Jackson, she's the Executive Vice President of Stellar Network and Central City Production, the people that run it, out of Chicago. She's with us this half hour on Smart TV Televised. And if you have a question or comment or many minutes with Jennifer, make that call now, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up for sure before the bottom of the hour, we will have our classic trivia question currently in play with some prizes for you if you're first with the correct answer. And then a very special celebration in celebration of Beth. We'll explain before the bottom of the hour. Jennifer, what do you and Don and everybody at Center C make of this incredible growth of African-American networks? We had Gravity TV on last Friday. We've had other networks on. You now have networks that are doing sports, particularly sports involving HBCUs, historically black college universities. What do you make of this whole landscape where you're seeing more networks than ever? You're seeing people like Byron Allen doing syndication in a bigger way, particularly in courtroom television. He's got local now, The Bundle. He's got the Griot TV and so on and so forth. What do you make of this landscape?
Yeah, it's you're right. It's has really, really increased. I mean, before it was really hard to find programming that was dedicated to African Americans. And what I'm seeing now is that everyone has their niche, right? And so you may have HBCU sports and that's a niche. And Blavity TV, you know, that's on a whole different level than we are with what we do. And so I think it's phenomenal for us to have so many different opportunities and platforms, and also a way for people who have content, now they have a much, much better opportunity of being able to find a place or a home for their content, you know, as long as it fits, you know, within the niche of whatever particular platform it's in. But, no, I think it's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Before you go, Jennifer, where do you see Stellar going in the next year or so? Are you getting proposals from independent producers like, I want to do scripted shows, I want to do this kind of show, I want to do these different kind of specials? Are we going to see, let's say, some of the advertisers like Procter & Gamble come up with original content as well as ads? Where do we see it going next year? And also, do you see Stellar next year perhaps getting involved in the upfronts or new fronts
in terms of
coming to New York and being part of the marketplace?
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely we're looking to participate in the 23-24 upfronts. We actually did our own upfront during Black Music Honors, where we invited a number of different advertising agencies to come in for 2 days and then as a treat, you know, to be there for a show. And so we had maybe about 15 different advertising agencies come in to see our upfront pitch. And then with regards to what we're looking to do in the future, yes, we are looking, we will soon, not just yet, be looking to get proposals from other content producers. We're looking at putting an emphasis on documentaries. We're looking at putting an emphasis on, again, it's just whatever programming we can develop that is family-friendly, where it's safe. If your kid walks in, it's safe. You don't have to change the channel, you know, or where a family can actually sit down and watch whatever the programming is together. And so that's our goal, uplifting, positive, and inspirational programming is what we're targeting to do.
Currently, Stellar TV, or the Stellar Network, is now running on cable systems owned across the country by Charter Communications under the Spectrum name in many markets, as well as Verizon Fios TV, coming to other cable systems, hopefully smart TV sets, devices, multi-channel bundles soon. If you missed, by the way, the premiere last weekend of the Black Music Honors on Stellar, it will be running again on that service over the next few weeks. It will also be running on local television stations using weekend time periods. Both primetime and during the day. So check your local listings over the next month to see if the Black Music Honors, as well as the Stellar Awards coming up in a few weeks as well, will be going on local TV stations near you. When you do that, by the way, you got to check for both the station your area and where they play it. Also, we want to let you know, too, that WGN-TV in Chicago will have a special presentation of the Black Music Honors on June 18th at 7 p.m. local time. And Bounce TV, which is run by Swift, they will have a presentation of that program the following day, June 19th, a special Juneteenth presentation. Juneteenth being, of course, a national holiday. And for more details about the service and Tennessee Productions, here's where you go online, www.stellartv.com. That's www.stellartv.com. Jennifer Jackson, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on the early success so far of the network. Hopefully much, much more success in original shows to come. And please let Don know that we would love to have him back and you back as well anytime you like. It's a pleasure.
All right, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, Jennifer. Take care. Have a super weekend.
All right, you too.
Jennifer Jackson, Executive Vice President of Central City Productions and the Stellar Network, joining us live from Chicago. In a moment, in celebration of death. First, our classic trivia question of the week. We've been kicking it in for the last week on this program. And if you are first with the correct answer, you can win a bunch of prizes, including a Starbucks award card courtesy of the BBC, the brand new best-selling book, Sons of Baseball, Growing Up with a Major League Dad, by recent TWBT guest Mark Graff, former publicist with USA Network and Madison Square Garden Network, also his own company, Graff Communications, for many years. And also from Canela Media, the Canela Kids coloring book based on the new hit animated series, Super Ellis, which is coming for a second season. And we also have some crayons to accompany that book as well. And they'll also be yours if you know the answer to this question. Complete the title of this 2008 ABC series, I Survived Blank. Complete the title of this 2008 ABC series, I Survived Blank. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first to pick the answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, Twitter UBC Simon, TWBT. So, and once again, here's the question. Complete the title of this 2008 ABC series. Ran two seasons. I Survived Blank. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. First correct answer wins by email. If you're a previous winner or you're a guest in this program, you are not eligible. Everyone else is. So get in the game now, and all the very best. And now, in celebration of Beth. The Beth I'm referring to is someone who was a very dear friend of my family, their friends, and yours truly. We're talking about Beth Polonsky. And if there was anyone that fit the popular phrase, life of the party, Beth Polonsky fit it to a T. She's one of those people that when you saw her or she saw you, you were immediately engaged with each other. She was ready to go with a thought on anything in the world, and so were you. And she was humorous. She was witty. She was engaging, inquisitive, and often opinionated, rightly and wonderfully so. And she was someone who was ready to go to speak with anybody, anytime, anywhere, including our annual Love Cousins Picnics, which are held Memorial Day weekend outside New York City. Beth Polonsky raised two wonderful kids, Philip, no longer with us, and Robbie, very much with us. And I mentioned Beth Polonsky because earlier this week, she left this earth. She left this earth complete. She left this earth loved by all who knew her, including my family and their friends. And earlier this afternoon, before we went on the air, she was buried with people around her in a cemetery near the border of Queens and Long Island. No question in my mind that Beth Polonsky is already engaged with whoever is up there with her, always with a voice, always with a word, always with something to say and how to say it beautifully. And down here, We will always celebrate her, which is why we're dedicating today's episode to her. So to Beth, we wish her family the best going forward, condolences to them. And to all of us, let's take a moment to celebrate this kind of person and the contribution she made during her wonderful time on Earth. When we come back, we will have the executive producer and director of the new Hulu made-for-TV film, Jagged Mind, Jenna Cabal and Kelly Kali. They will join me after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunein.com, together reaching over 85 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, New York, 71 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Welcome to those of you just joining us. We're happy you are. And if you have a question or comment for our final guest of this two-hour episode, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. On June 15th, Hulu will premiere its latest original film. It's a very unique one called Jagged Mind. And it's all about a relationship between two women and what it provokes. The film will also get a screening that week in Miami Beach at the annual American Black Film Festival. Joining us live in an inner radio exclusive, we have both the executive producer and the director of Jagged Mind, Jenny Cabal and Kelly Kali. Jenny and Kelly, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And Jenna, where are you calling from? What city?
I'm in Los Angeles.
And same thing for you, Kelly?
Yes, we're both here in L.A.
Great. Can I start with you? How did Jagged Mind come to be?
Well, it was originally a movie by a different name. It was a short film in one of our bite-sized seasons a couple of years ago. And we really loved working with the writer, Allison Morgan, so much that we engaged her to write the feature version of it. And so this was one of the rare instances in our business model where we had a writer but not a director for the feature. So when Hulu fell in love with Allison's script, it quickly became an open directing assignment, which was very exciting for me. Kelly was the very first person that I thought of for the job. I slipped through the script right away. Fortunately, our head of development, who developed the script with Allison, Arby, was also very familiar with Kelly's work and had been a fan of hers and, you know, saw her film, I'm Fine, Thanks for Asking, at South By. And it helped that Kelly and I went to film school together. So we had always sort of talked about our common love for the erotic thriller and talked about one day being able to make one together. So you know, a few different directors pitched, and Kelly definitely blew her pitch out of the water, and before long we had a deal and we were making a movie.
Kelly, last hour we had Alex Bono, the director of the first and final episodes of Peacocks based on a true story that premiered yesterday, and we asked him how he tried to work with Craig Rosenberg's the creator's vision, as well as his vision and the vision of the actors. What did you see as the challenge going into this?
Well, you know, when Jenna first sent me the script and I looked at the story, it was very different from what it is now. And truthfully, I didn't think I was going to get the job because when I came into pitch, I completely changed a lot of things that were originally in the script. So I had, like, initially the script read as two white women. And see, I didn't watch the short. I intentionally avoided the short because I didn't want it to influence my perception of what the feature could be. And I automatically knew that I would want the lead to be African-American or Afro-Caribbean, and I thought that it'd be much more interesting to have an interracial dynamic in already such a complex relationship, mainly because I also come from an interracial background, and I remember what it was like when we would go outside and people, no one would be aggressive towards my parents, but you would get those side eyes, you know, like, oh, they together. So I thought that having that element would be great. And what I didn't realize is that's how the short was. It was an interracial couple. And so me and Allison were already on the same page from that. But then it took place in New York. And I didn't feel, because it has magic in it, that New York was the place for it. I felt like we had an opportunity to really ground the story and to make it feel like maybe this is something that could happen. So I suggested that we put it in a place where people believe in magic. And I originally said New Orleans. And so I got the pitch. And then Miami was brought up for logistical reasons. And so I said, well, if we do it in Miami, then we need to do it in Little Haiti, which also, you know, Haiti had a lot of influence on New Orleans, so it's tied together. But one of the things I wanted to really make sure of is that we were not depicting any voodoo as evil, because it's a religion to be respected like any other religion. So I, you know, talked to my executives and such and the writer to see if we could add a another character, a Haitian character, which ended up being our actor, Jimmy Jean-Louis, and changed one of the characters, Rose, into a Haitian character as well, and implement the culture of Haiti into the film, but in a more respectful and loving way, because I've spent a lot of time in Haiti over the last decade, so I naturally already have a love for the country and the culture, so... That was challenging, but you know who made it easy was my executives, like Jenna and Arby and David and Carl and the writer Allison, because and the executives at Hulu, too. They all listened to my concerns and made it easy to make those adjustments and get the movie done.
Mm-hmm. And Jenna, this film blends a number of very unique, some might say controversial elements together, interracial love, interracial mm-hmm. love between two women. And also mm-hmm. a lot of mind games, a lot of psychology, a lot of mm-hmm. what's real, what's unreal, where am I really at? How mm-hmm. do you take those elements that Allison, the writer, gave you and Kelly's directing work and then make it come together?
I mean, you know, honestly, it's all in Kelly's execution. I think that we were always excited by the fact that Allison wanted to sort of explore this intersection of sexual orientation and gender and ethnicity. And when Kelly came on board, Little Haiti as well, becoming sort of another cultural element through the lens of a time loop thriller. And then you add in this whole memory and gaslighting sort of relationship, and you get this really fascinating and rich thematically piece of material that is very contemporary and something that I think is for everyone. I think that's what's exciting about it. I don't think there's anyone who's going to come to this film and not see some piece of their life and what they experience being navigated and negotiated in some way. And I think it takes a director that approaches art and life in that way. And, you know, I've known Kelly for almost a decade now, and that's who she is. That's how she navigates her day-to-day life. It's how she approaches art. And so I think that's how you do it, if you find the right director. And I think that we did. And I'm really, really excited for everyone to see what she's done with it.
Jagged Mind premieres on Hulu, the mega content service available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles on June 15th. And the day before, the American Black Film Festival kicks in Miami Beach, and the film will be running there as well. We have both the executive producer, Jenna Cabal. We have the director, Kelly Kelly. They're both with us live from Los Angeles this half hour here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Alpha, I'm with you live from New Ever York. Happy to have you aboard on this Friday afternoon before hopefully a wonderful weekend where we will get this whole smoggy air quality haze that at times turned orange here in the Big Apple, finally out the door wherever it is going. And if you have a question or comment for our guest, give us a call. The number is 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. One more time, on our next episode, Monday afternoon, we've got two internet-exclusive radio interviews for you. The Chief Strategy Officer, Dallas Lawrence from Telly. That's the unique smart TV device venture, which is going to give out up to 500,000 customers new souped-up smart TV sets for free. Dallas Lawrence will be here in our first half hour to talk all about it. Then, the brand new executive, Chief Creative Officer of Chime TV, the Asian American Programming Service, Takeshi Cheng, will be aboard. That's all coming up Monday. Two internet radio exclusive interviews back-to-back with your phone calls and chat and reaction. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Kelly, with the characters, by the way, they're played by Maisie Richardson Sellers. Some of you may remember her from the CW shows Legends of Tomorrow and The Originals. And Shannon Woodward, who came from Westwood, Raising Hope, other interesting shows, as Alex, the girlfriend. How long did it take to get, A, the chemistry together between the two, but also to see how far you could take them to take the storyline?
Yes. You know what's interesting is that coming straight out of the pandemic, we had to do our chemistry reads over Zoom. And I was really concerned about that. Most chemistry reads I've ever done have always been in person, and you could really get a read of their body language. But I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to capture that through Zoom, but it worked. And their dynamic was exactly how I had envisioned Billy being and Alex being. And the two of them just were able to feed off of each other. But they're very professional actors. I tell you, I didn't really have to do much with them, if I'm being truthful. And that made it easier for me to really focus on the style and the camera moves, because we would sit down together. We had a few intimacy rehearsals with our intimacy coordinator. And, you know, after that and after we addressed what was very important, the things that they were comfortable with, where they were comfortable being touched and held and laid and kissed and all of that, after that, they just went for it. So once we talked it out, shared our ideas about the characters, they brought it. And I really think that intimacy coaching helps a lot with that, because then everyone's on the same page and the actors feel free to be able to move about and not be thinking so much about, am I offending someone? Am I touching them wrong? And so they were able to just focus on their chemistry and the acting.
Is that, by the way, something new for either you, Jenna, or Kelly, an intimacy coordinator on set that specifically takes that role? Is that new?
No, not for us. We've done it on most of our films, actually. There's usually one anytime, even if two characters aren't being intimate with one another, if there's nudity or implied intimacy, we generally work with one for authenticity's sake, but mostly for the protection, you know, of the actors and making sure that everyone feels comfortable. But I've definitely been on sets long, long ago where there wasn't one. I can see in retrospect how much differently and how much more safe the actors would have felt, and I think the scenes would have come out a lot better had we had them. So it's definitely something that we always require. It's worth the extra money and the extra time to really, look at these things delicately and from many perspectives and make sure that everybody feels safe and, you know, is on the same page as the director. And Kelly, in particular, has dealt with a lot of sensitive content. And so she's really skilled at doing this already. And so having that additional coordination just really elevated the whole process, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just to answer that as well. Oh,
go ahead.
Before earlier on, I used to get stunt coordinators who also understood intimacy. So like what Jenna's referencing, like a long time ago. So for some of my, cause I did a film that had child trafficking in it, and there were scenes where you know, not real children, but adults that look like children were being molested. And so that was a very tense time. But I didn't have an intimacy coordinator at that time. There wasn't a title for that, but that was years ago. But I would look for a stunt coordinator who can do it. And I usually looked for a woman because a lot of our actors tend to be more comfortable with women doing that. But yeah, it's evolved into this type of role, which has been extremely helpful.
Janet, it looks like the American Black Film Festival, for the first time in several years, is really taking a major turn into television. I believe there's like something like 15, 20 TV series pilots that will be presented in Miami Beach starting late next week. How do they get word about your movie and decide, yeah, we're going to show it?
Yeah, I mean, we made the movie in Miami. We always, this slate of films, we always angle to have a festival launch before we have a platform launch. And so we're always targeting festivals that shape nicely around the filmmaker and the content and the film. And we always had our eye on ABFF. We knew that it was going to be premiering during Pride Month and that it would become part of Hulu's Pride efforts. And so also Kelly is alumni of ABFF, so it just made a lot of sense for us to partner up with them, and I think it's probably going to be one of our better partnerships with the festival. We're really, really excited to bring it back home to where we first made it and share it with audiences in Florida.
Mm-hmm. And Kelly, what do you think about the fact that the ABFF is, for the first time in a number of years, and certainly since the pandemic was lifted, and we're now in the era of the next normal, that they are getting into TV series pilots? They're giving more pilots made by people of color the opportunity to be seen. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, Jenna. Go ahead.
Well, ABFF has always been for the Black community and just community of color a platform when we never had one. And so as ABFF started to grow, I mean, it started years ago in the 90s in Acapulco, you know, but Nicole and Jeff Friday really kept it going. And it's now this massive platform. I mean, they have first look deals with Sony. They're allying with Netflix. They've already had an alliance with HBO, and having someone who really cares about marginalized communities who rarely get to tell their stories and pushing it through, especially with all the new streamers out, is phenomenal. And I'm not shocked that they're doing it because they have been the pioneers of getting content out from the Black community and the community of color, whereas many others haven't been, or they didn't have the resources or ability. But Jeff and Nicole hustle, and they make sure that all of their filmmakers, I mean, they get to know us, they really follow our career, they really care. ABFF is not just a festival, but it's an incubator. It helps to grow young filmmakers to be able to get this type of content out. So them having that many TV programs, no surprise. They've been planning it, I'm sure, and there's probably so much more to come.
And incidentally, at one point, the ABFF used to be here in New York City. I went to some of their events, the Fridays are marvelous people. They're great entrepreneurs, great organizers. They've done a whale of a job, and it's really great to see that TV has come really back into the fold with the showing of TV series pilots, with made-for-TV movies like this one, so on and so forth. We are talking with the executive producer and the director, Jenna Cavell and Kelly Kelly of Jagged Mind. That is the new movie coming to Hulu on June 15th and will be screened at the American Black Film Festival taking place this year in Miami Beach. If a question or comment on our remaining minutes with our duo, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, in addition to doing Tomorrow Be Televised, you can also catch my work at MediaVillage.com. That's the media leadership website where we cover all sorts of different things with a great group of writers, editors, and analysts. You can also catch me in persona every Wednesday or Thursday on Sports News Wire. That is the Sports News Information Hour at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Sports Grid Network. Available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, Amazon Freevee, and other multi-channel bundles covering the world of TV, sports. And incidentally, starting either next month or in August, there'll be a new Spanish-language version of Sports Grid Network coming your way, again, through smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. What, for both of you, what do you hope that the gay, the lesbian audience in particular, gay, lesbian, et cetera, will get from this film? What, for both of you, what message do you want to see them get?
Well, for me, that it's, you know what really I want? I like, if you read my bio and such, it ends with that I want to be a content creator that focuses on marginalized communities, content that's highlighting marginalized communities. But I just don't want us to be marginalized anymore. So the thing about this film is I want people to feel normal, that it doesn't have, it's not a lesbian movie, it's not a like black film, it's not, it's just a film and a story and human beings. And one thing that Allison did very, very well that I really liked about the script is that there's no coming out here. Like when you're looking at a lot of queer films, there's usually a coming out, there's some like major trauma that they're overcoming from a past thing. But with this, we just drop straight into the lives of two women who are just trying to date, just trying to fall in love. And we've all been trying to fall in love, find the person for us. It's normal. And we've all maybe have done something a little too much, a little above and beyond to try to make someone love you more that's not quite who you are. And so I think that that's a normal thing that many of us have experienced, and that's really what I want people to take away from it, is that we've all been through this and we've all been seeking love in sometimes the wrong places.
Yeah, and for me, I'm just really excited for the community to experience a genre film, you know, something that's a little scary and twists and turns and suspense and, you know, that is a time loop. And there's just like a lot of things that we're trying with this movie that I feel is exciting for the community to see them being represented in. So for me, it's really about the genre and being able to experience storytelling for that community in that way, I think is not something that we see often enough, and I'm really excited to be able to give that to this community.
Before you both go, Kelly, I want to give you the same opportunity I gave to Alex last hour. Alex Bernoffel, based on true story. Your thoughts about the director, any thoughts about the Directors Guild of America New Deal, and whether it could open the door for maybe the Writers Guild and the Alliance of TV and Motion Pictures to finally get back to the bargaining table and get something settled?
I mean, I'm really hoping it does. When that deal came through, that's the first thing that came to mind was, okay, good. I hope that this helps to pave the way to get the WGA what they need. And I stand with the WGA. I don't think they're asking for too much. I think they're asking for what's fair. So I'm hoping that that's what it does, and the same with SAG. And that we all come to some agreement soon that is absolutely fair. I mean, we're working in a new market of no one saw streaming coming, and I think that that's what the bigger problem is that these negotiations were never really in place, and now with the pandemic, it's made them, these streaming platforms, a powerhouse. But I am very happy that the DGA came to an agreement, and I ultimately hope that that will pave the way for the other unions. But I do strongly believe that their asks need to be met.
And Jenna, how do you respond, or what do you think about this issue of the Alliance sort of not saying anything about where they stand, what they'd like to do, getting back to the bargaining table? There's a sense of we're not going to talk to the press. We're not going to go on CNBC or news networks or whatever and get our side of the story. We're going to hide behind press releases and talking points that people like myself or folks at TV's Top 5 at the Hollywood Report, et cetera, will give through their intermediaries. Is it time for the Alliance to get out in front? Are they getting bad PR advice?
I honestly don't know. I don't know what's in their head. I don't know that I'm really the expert to make any sort of predictions around that. I just really hope that everyone gets the deal they deserve and that the industry can get back up and running. We can keep working. It's a privilege to do what we do. It's not a given. I want us to keep moving and hope that fair deals are struck so that we can all keep doing the jobs of our dreams, you know? So that's really where I sit on it. In terms of getting into the politics of why they're not speaking and who's advising them, I honestly just, I don't know. What I do know is that every day that this drags on is another day that I don't get to make movies like this with filmmakers like Kelly. And so I just hope every day and pray to the universe that we can find a way through this. And I know that we will, because I do think that ultimately there's been a paradigm shift in society, and that we are, as painful as it is and as far as we have to go, we are committed as a society to a more equitable, sharing of resources. And I really think that's what's at the heart of this strike. So it'll get done when it gets done, and everyone will come out better for it.
Peter, we said, Jenna, and once again, we said this all along the last couple of weeks, it's time for both sides to get back to that bargaining table, and it starts with both sides being open and communicating with each other. You got to get what you have to say out of the brain, out of the mouth, out in the open, because anything can be handled in communication, but it starts with everybody, both sides, coming together and saying, let's get back to that bargaining table, lock the door, and let's make a deal that works for everybody. And it can happen. So Jenna beautifully said. Again, the film is Jagged Mind. It will premiere on Hulu on June 15th. It will also be screening at the American Black Film Festival in Miami Beach, Florida. For more details about the service and the film online, go to Hulu.com. And for more details about the American Black Film Festival, which we hope to, by the way, do a segment on later this month with some of the winners of the TV pilot competition there, go to www.abff.com. That's Hulu.com. And www.abff.com for more about the American Black Film Festival. Jenna Cavell, Kelly, thank you both very much for talking about Jagged Mind and what you're up to with that film. Good luck with the movie at ABFF and on Hulu later this month. It's been a great pleasure having you aboard, and all the best to both of you. We'd love to have you back anytime.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah, we appreciate you. Thanks for doing what you do.
You're very, very welcome, Jenna and Kelly. Take care. Have a super weekend.
Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
And that will do it for this edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Thank you all for tuning in. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and go to and support our wonderful podcast affiliates, including the iRadio Podcast Network, Apple and Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and others. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts about the future of television? Give us a like at social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, both at Simon Applebaum, Twitter, UBC Simon WBT. Check us out at SimonApple04@yahoo.com. However you respond to me, I respond back to you within 24 hours, because what you say matters now more than ever. But Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend. Back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Whatever you're doing, do it now and then. Make it safe. Make it great. And Beth Polonsky, we celebrate you. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.